If you thought that trouble getting or keeping an erection was just a down there type problem, then think again. Medical experts are now telling us that for many men, it's in fact much, much more. It seems that erectile dysfunction, as it's formerly known, is often a warning sign, an early warning sign of heart disease or other circulatory problems. In fact, evidence suggests that as a lead indicator, it's 3 years ahead of the normal tract indicators. Not only that, but management, crucially, seems to be linked to the same lifestyle factors as for diabetes, heart disease and stroke. And here to tell us more is dietitian Rael Copping. Lovely to welcome you back to the show, Rael. How are you?
Thank you, Jay. Great. I'm good. And you?
Yeah, I'm really, really super. Let's start with the basics, Rael. ED or erectile dysfunction, the inability to get or keep an erection firm enough to have sexual intercourse, and sometimes referred to as impotence. So I think that term is sort of used less often. Which men typically are most commonly affected by erectile dysfunction?
Well, you'll be amazed at the kind of incidents we're talking about, you know. So I think it's something, and this is the reason behind this show, is, as you said, it is such a brilliant lead indicator, and yet it's something we don't really talk about. So just in terms of prevalence, and you can imagine it's quite difficult to get accurate figures, but this is something I've downloaded, which was published in Nature 2002 of a study done by a guy called Roda and colleagues. And he was saying, now this was a community-based study where people came forward voluntarily for various services, and ED was one of the things they screened for. Now, here are the important numbers. In the age of 40 to 50, 36% of the males reported some level of ED.
That's extraordinary. That seems incredibly. Yeah.
50 to 60 age group, 42%. 60 to 69, 58%. And 70 to 79, 80%. So I think this is something which is, and this was the reason why I gave you the call. I thought, my goodness, look what a major, major thing this is. And yet nobody's talking about it. You know, I go every year for medical screening. I go to have my bloods and my insurance tests. Nobody ever asks me about this parameter, which, as you said correctly, precedes the other indices, which is, you know, we know what the other indices are. It's what's your blood pressure, what's your cholesterol like, what's your blood sugar like. Do you smoke? Do you have diabetes, etc.? And this is going to give you a warning 3 to 5 years before those other parameters that we focus our attention on so much. So I thought, no, this is definitely something we need to bring into the public space. You know?
Absolutely. So when the gents are going for their regular medicals, or they find themselves, which I have to say, I mean, we've done a whole conversation before about how men aren't going to the doctor enough. But that, again, that's a conversation for another day. But one of the first questions that men then sort of a certain age should be being asked by their medical practitioner is, are you experiencing erectile dysfunction?
Mm. So let's just, you know, I think that's such an interesting thing, and it's not an on-off, you know. So I wonder if you want, that's what I'm suggesting. There's an international index of erectile function, which is a series of 15 questions.
Okay.
But they're quickly. So, well, quickly, excuse me, this is the pun. But, SJ, I want to just quickly go through them, because
please.
I think the point is, it's not do you or don't you. There are graded levels of function. And I think, you know, as you say, men don't go to the doctor very much, but I think this is one area in which the missus might help with the diagnosis, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think I could be in a lot of trouble for saying that with any of the guys. But let's just go through. I'm just going to do it quickly because it's not the main topic. So these are the internationally validated questions. And I'm specifying for each one, it's not a yes-no answer. It's a scale, a five rating scale.
Right.
So zero, one, almost never, a few times, sometimes. You know how those work. So the first question, how often were you able to get an erection during sexual activity? And you answer only 1 to 5. Mm-hmm. Question two, when you had erections with sexual stimulation, how often were your erections hard enough for penetration?
Mm-hmm.
Question three, when you attempted intercourse, how often were you able to penetrate your partner? Question four, during sexual intercourse, how often were you able to maintain your erection after you penetrated your partner? Question five, during intercourse, how difficult was it to maintain your erection and complete intercourse?
Mm-hmm.
Question six, how many times have you attempted sexual intercourse? Question seven, when you attempted sexual intercourse, how often was it satisfactory? Question 8, how much have you enjoyed sexual intercourse? Question 9, when you had sexual stimulation or intercourse, how often did you ejaculate? Question 10, when you had sexual stimulation or intercourse, how often did you have feelings of orgasm or climax? Question 11, how often have you felt sexual desire? 12, how would you rate your level of sexual desire? 13, how satisfied have you been with your overall sex life? 14, how satisfied have you been with your sexual relationship with your partner? And 15, how do you rate your confidence that you could get and keep an erection? So you can see from these questions, the reason why I went through it is some of it is very much related to physical factors.
Yes.
Some of it is related to psychological factors. Some of it is relationship factors. So it's not just all simply hung on one peg, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, I understand now why you say it's not just a case of the doctor saying, do you have erectile dysfunction? Because the understanding of what erectile dysfunction might look like it varies. And yeah, I understand now why those questions are so important, Ral. Yeah.
So it's a far more complex issue. Now, in answering the questions that I know you're going to ask me, I'm just saying by way of reference, because this is not my area of study. Obviously, I'm a dietitian. So I'm quoting now quite a lot of two main studies. One is the Princeton Consensus Recommendation for Management of Erectile Dysfunction and Cardiovascular Disease that was published in 2012. And the second one is the Erectile Dysfunction as a Marker of Cardiovascular Disease, published in Acta Cardiologica in April 2019. So these are very reputable journals and very, very big studies and very recent information. So just by way of credibility, that's where I'm getting this info from. Now, these guys are saying, that as we've just unpacked it, it's a complex issue. It's not simply a one-size-fits-all diagnosis. But they say, irrespective of the nature of the ED, of the erectile dysfunction, people are experiencing it still have a higher risk of cardiovascular disease. So even if it's caused by stress or even if it's caused by relationship problems, etc., you still will be in a higher risk bracket for your cardiovascular disease. Mm. So how much higher is that bracket? So in other words, if you're comparing yourself to your doppelganger other self, and the only difference is one has got ED or whatever severity, how much more risk do you have? And what they're saying is for coronary heart disease, the one who has the erectile dysfunction will have between 31 and 63% higher risk of heart disease, depending obviously on the severity of the ED. And in terms of stroke, it's a 20 to 55% higher risk. So it's a significantly higher risk we're talking about if you have the ED symptoms. Now, if we're comparing, you know, you think about it, what are the risk factors that you most often will talk about in a medical examination? And probably one of the biggest predictors is, do you have a family history of heart disease? Because that speaks to our genetics, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, I'm again talking on numbers, so just move me on if it's a bit boring. But if you have a strong family history of heart disease, that might increase your risk of heart disease by 40%, they say. Right? If you don't, so we compare now the erectile dysfunction to a family history of heart disease. If you're presenting with the ED, it might increase your risk by between 30 and 60%.
Sure.
So that's how powerful a marker this is. It's probably as powerful as having a family history of heart disease.
Isn't that incredible?
So,
yeah.
These numbers are shocking. So there, I think that should have got anyone's attention who was sleeping at this time of the morning.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
You got that out. Yeah, so I'm sure you've got lots of questions leading on from there.
Yeah, I have. And if you are just joining us this morning, we're chatting to local dietitian Ral Coping about these studies which have shown that there is a high prevalence of erectile dysfunction in patients suffering with cardiovascular disease. But more than that, ED might actually appear 3 to 5 years before the other diagnostic signs of cardiovascular disease. So in that sense, I mean, how hugely important is that? And the numbers that the Rail is talking about. So I suppose what I'm interested to know is how did they what's the link here from a purely mechanical perspective? An erection is a hydraulic event, as it were. Extra blood has to be delivered to the penis in order for it to get hard to get erect. It must stay there for a while, and then following climax, it then sort of drains away. So what's the biology then?
That is a huge question, you know. So let's take a step back from that, you know, and if you look at the circulatory system, it's your body's highway of moving things around inside. An insect has what's called an open circulatory system, which is like a swimming pool with a pump, you know.
Yeah.
And so whatever circulated in there kind of just floats around and moves around by diffusion, and that's why insects can't get very big, because there's a limit to how quickly things and effectively things can move across that volume of fluid. Now, we've got what's called a closed circulatory system. So it's not like a swimming pool. It's more like a drip irrigation system or highly complex pipes and valves which move that fluid around very specifically to different areas. So these blood vessels are highly, highly active tissues, and they interact very intimately with the immune system. So I'm just dropping it in here that inflammation is the language that's spoken between the immune system and your cardiovascular system, amongst others. Mm. But it's very, very important that there's a very high level of inflammation and the controlling of inflammation in how this very, very complex system works. So I'm not going to go into the steps of how the physiology of the erection, because it's long and complicated. It involves certain muscles contracting while others relax. It involves nervous innervation, and it involves psychological innervation as well, and there's many local stimuli and remote stimuli. Super complicated. I think the point is that all of the systems which are required for regulating our closed circulatory system are manifest very, very clearly inside the penis in erection process. And the vessels of the penis are smaller than obviously the major arteries, etc., inside the body. So when something starts going wrong, you won't necessarily see it in the large arteries. You'll see it more quickly in the smaller arteries of the penis. So you can take it as a micro model of the macro system. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah.
But all of the important stuff going on in the big picture is happening very closely in the small picture.
Okay.
Not small, but you know.
Yeah, be very careful about the language you're using.
I've been very careful.
Yeah, indeed. Does it follow then that some of the treatments that one might use to manage heart disease could also be used to treat ED and vice versa?
Absolutely, yes. So what are those guidelines? And the guidelines will sound very familiar, but I'm going to go through them over here. Number one, stop smoking. Smoking is disastrous for blood vessel function.
Mm.
Number two, exercise. Unbelievably important. And that's a whole discussion on its own, the benefits that exercise has for the cardiovascular system. And I'm not talking now about weight loss or about fitness or whatever, just in terms of maintaining and activating the blood vessel vasculature. It's unbelievably important, you know. Sugar control is hugely important. If one has got diabetes, it puts a whole different spin on the risk factors. So generally keeping one's blood sugar under control is very important. Reducing alcohol, and then losing weight if overweight is a problem for you. So the changes in lifestyle are very much the same as one would have for the general cardiovascular health.
Yeah.
And the question is just urgency and quick implementation. So again, these studies are saying that you can increase your risk for both diabetes and heart disease by 30 to 50% just by implementing those things we've talked about now, those broad lifestyle changes.
And I suppose with all things, really, it's the early detection that is key, because it then provides a space for us to do something about it. And again, I'm going to harp back to the importance of men going to the doctor, not just if they feel like, you know, my arm's going to fall off and that's when I'm going to go, but to go regularly, particularly when you hit a certain age, to make sure that it's part of your attention to health. There's no use, you know, clapping it at the gym every day. Once you get, the fact of the matter is, isn't it, that once you get to a certain age, I'm at a certain age now, I'm 40, there's other health, you know, I need to start going for mammograms. That's what I need to do. And it's about the, it's about recognizing that, our bodies change as we get older, and there are things that we just need to do in order to make sure that it's all working and doing what it should be doing. And that if it isn't, we have the room, and the ability to make the changes, that are necessary.
Exactly. So I'm looking again at a review of these lifestyle interventions in these studies, and they say all patients, lifestyle changes are likely to reduce the cardiovascular risk profile and improve erectile function. So I think across the board, they found benefits in these measures we're talking about. And I just want to qualify that when they say improve erectile function, it doesn't mean necessarily you'll get perfect erectile function. But as we've seen, as a big graded scale, there will definitely be improvement. But I'm putting a little caveat in there. There might still be need for pharmacological intervention or other intervention as well. Now, guys will often go for treatment because, obviously, they want to sort out the ED. And that's where they put out a warning sign against using, what is the little blue pill called again? Viagra, etc.
Yeah, I also drew a blank.
It sorts out one of the symptoms, but it doesn't sort out the big picture of the disease process. So it's just a little word I'm putting in there. You don't think, oh well, ED, I can just take the pill and sort out the sexual function. Yes, that is obviously a very popular course of action.
Yeah.
But it doesn't address the underlying disease process.
Yeah.
And I think that one must be super aware of at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And just a final note, I wonder what factors sort of embarrassment would play. Is it that every man necessarily is saying, okay, I'm experiencing some ED and therefore I'm going to get it treated? Or I'm assuming this probably does happen a lot. You just sort of shut up and you say, well, that's that. And you close the lid on your sex life and that's the end of it. Or it becomes a very, difficult topic to discuss with your partner, perhaps a lot of shame around it. But you could, in addressing your ED, you could be, saving your own life.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff, Ray. We've run out of time, but I really, really appreciate you bringing this topic to my attention, a really, really important one. And thanks so much for your time. And we must get you back on to talk food-related stuff too soon.
Well, obviously, there's a big food component to this.
Yeah.
We can chat about that at a later stage as well. But that's great. I look forward.
Wonderful. Yeah, lovely stuff. Thanks ever so much, Raoul Coping, local dietitian and friend of the show, talking about the link between erectile dysfunction and cardiovascular disease. But more than that, not only the link, but the fact that it serves, erectile dysfunction is serving or has been found to serve as a key indicator ahead, at least 3 years ahead of normal tract indicators for heart disease.